Hello and welcome to Lot Awful Rudy's 47. No Rudy's. There is no Rudy's we're seen in the making of this lamb.
No Rudy's, Rudy's, no Rudy's, no Rudy's.
Lot Awful TV shows, actually, because we watched Your Honor, episode one, on wherever you could watch a Showtime thing.
Yeah. I am 100% a subscriber to Showtime.
Yeah, I would watch it on Amazon. They let you watch the first episode for free. So if you want to watch it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I should have told you that. I didn't figure that out until late last night. But if you want to watch it, go watch it there. I thought I was a Showtime something. I thought it was somewhere in the 1,800 different packages that I have, but apparently not. Or it is, and I just went to the wrong one. Like, that's entirely possible. I don't know how much stuff I've double paid for in my streaming career. Probably a lot.
Probably a lot. I have fewer streaming services, and I try to remember, like, you know, I subscribed to CBS to get Star Trek Discovery, and then, like, the second that was over, I was like,
the worst.
Oh, it's clearly the worst.
CBS sucks. Yeah, anyway.
It sucks, but. I really enjoyed season 2.
Yeah, so. I got to watch. It's somewhere on my list. I've heard people say it's good. I haven't watched it yet, but.
I liked it. So I have to know. All right. So we watched Your Honor with Bryan Cranston. Obviously, Bryan Cranston, a fantastic
one of the best
actor.
Working actors there is.
Yeah.
So that helps your show a little bit.
I think that's right. What was your thought of just overall? We're going to do law. We're going to do all that stuff. How did this show make you feel, Thomas?
I thought this show was okay despite its best efforts. Like, I thought, like, because I don't know if you're the same as me, but I can't handle all the fucking marketing of everything. Everything, the way everything is marketed, it ruins it for me. Like, this show, I don't know, it's a solid 6 or 7. Like, it's the first episode, it was fine. It wasn't like... I have some quibbles and, obviously we can't wait to get to the law scene. That's going to be – we spent – the process of watching the show was 15 minutes of, oh, no, we can't use this. There's nothing else. And then goldmine the scene.
And then the skies part.
Yeah.
The soul sunbeam comes down and illuminates you. Hear a chorus of angels.
We will not spoil it, but oh, my God.
Oh, God. It's it may be – the best bad law I've ever seen in any TV show.
Yeah,
it's so
nice.
It's
well, what
so
did you think of the show?
Slash bad. So I was very, very torn throughout this. Right, and I think my biggest takeaway is how are there 10 episodes of this? Right, like we're gonna get into it, but like that I could see there being 2. Right, but the show. I think the only way to get to 10 episodes is they're going to have to do a lot of the like murder she wrote. Like, don't remember that thing that happened 20 minutes ago. Like,
here's what it'll be. They had here's my guess. I haven't seen any of the episodes. I haven't read about any of the episodes. I don't know. My guess will be, hey, let's turn this upstanding judge into a criminal mastermind. No one's ever done that with a Bryan Cranston character before in the history of TV. That'll be fantastic. It'll be a slow process. You see, he'll start as the best judge, law-abiding judge guy, super judgy judge. And then by the end, he'll be like, shooting people or something. That's my guess. I don't know.
Well, I was going to have, like, as a challenge for you, like, Thomas, describe the pitch for this TV show. But... without using the words Breaking Bad.
Oh, geez. Can't do it. Do you remember a show? Do I get to do the like charades thing? Where like
sounds like Waking Sad.
Shad. Yeah.
Oh,
it's, well,
yeah.
Okay. Here's the thing, though.
Mad.
I went through that whole thought process, too. Like, I'm sure where it's like, and that's part of what I was talking about. Like, the marketing of this is like, well, you fucking... You're breaking the fourth wall. I almost said third wall. It'd be a weird.
I don't know breaking
what kind of geometry that would be. But anyway,
No one wants depth.
Yeah. Well, I've been playing a lot of NES lately, so I guess in those side scrollers, you can break the third wall. I don't know.
Well, that was what made the first Super Mario Brothers so great. You could break the second wall. You could climb up on the top.
So anyway, what I was saying was. I like the marketing of it, it inevitably involves that. Like, it's like, oh, Brian Craig drawing the similarities. Like, they're doing everything they can to try to do that. And in the end, when you watch the show, if I had just seen this show, this episode, not knowing who even Bryan Cranston is or something, you know, like just seeing the show, I'd be like, oh, that's okay. You know, that's interesting mystery unfolding. Like, you gotta, well, not mystery, but it's a conflict rather. Like, you gotta, you know, the concept of the show is very simple. You got a judge and his son.
It's Breaking Bad with the judge.
Kills the kid. Kind of, yeah. And then the kid turns out to be a criminal. I love how there's, well, anyway, I just described the entire plot of the show, so now we don't have to do anything here.
There we go.
Anyway.
A lot of awful movies, everybody.
My point was only going to be to finish it off that conceptually it's not the worst idea. It's fine. It's okay idea. Not a bad plot idea, but, you know, the marketing around it and the Bryan Cranston stuff, like, it just bothers me. That's kind of how I feel about it.
See, it's weird because I have not seen any of the marketing around it because, you know, I live in a basement.
What are you talking about? You literally told me about, like, oh, have you seen the one where they're just doing Breaking Bad again? That's what I mean.
Okay, fair enough. So I like the idea of Breaking Bad, but X, right? Because those are shows you can do, right? And I watched
You've
Ozark.
Killed a drug
right?
criminal. You're going to mention.
No.
Did I tell you I've killed a drug lord's kid with my car? I don't remember if that story's come up.
But I watched Ozark, right? And Ozark is kind of like, what if it's Breaking Bad, but with an accountant, right? Like, I mean, you know, so look, like, I think you can do.
Yeah, with Ozark, it's like, what if we took, you know how Breaking Bad had Bryan Cranston, fantastic actor. What if we didn't do that, though? What if we had a guy who can't act be the Bryan Cranston, and then one of the best actresses of all time will be his wife, but we won't give her fucking shit to do for the first season? I quit that show. It wasn't good. Sorry. I heard it gets better later, but it's
That's she becomes, I think, the focal point. So anyway, you might enjoy seasons 2 and 3. Anyway, doesn't matter. There's a lot of, like, room for what if Breaking Bad but X profession. I mean, you know, like, it would be tough with what if Breaking Bad but shoe shine, right?
Dentist.
Like, that would, right? what if Breaking Bad but, you know, right.
Legal podcaster. Here we go. It's your time to shine, Andrew.
There we go. It is my time to shine. Couple other things that they did that I really, so, there was 1.5 scenes that I really, really liked in the show. We'll get to the one that I really thought just hit all the right notes. Almost nothing else did. I really hate when TV shows, like, lie with the camera, but in a way that they hope you would not notice. Right. And I'm going to explain what I mean by that one. I don't know why every single fucking lawyer movie or TV show has to be set in fucking Louisiana.
Yeah.
And like, is that it?
Right when I saw him running through that crypt, I was like, oh, we're back at that crypt, aren't we? This is fucking Louisiana. Does any other city or state in this union have a crypt like that? Or is that just the crypt that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So I don't, so think, I guess that's the question is, would you watch episode 2 of this show? And I'm
like
know.
A
yeah.
firm.
I'm a firm. I am with you. I am a firm. Meh. All right. So with that in mind, first scene, we get hoodie guy jogging. Smash
or
cut.
Ever. He will be jogging for 45 minutes. And I know now that I say that, every runner listening is going to be like, that's how long I run. But okay, 45 minutes of showtime means he ran 800 miles.
Right. And look, like, you know, it probably takes you, like, things do not take the amount of time they're supposed to take on the screen.
That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
Exactly.
Convert it into real minutes.
Damn it. I really want to watch somebody brush their teeth for 2 minutes. Right.
Yeah.
So that's smash cut with the teenager who's trying to kick his girlfriend out of bed. And this is what I mean by lying with the camera. The TV show wants to set up at the beginning, like, oh, maybe this is like a single teen, like, living in squalor, The room's a total fucking mess. And like that, they edit all that out later when you find out that this is the judge's kid, right? Like,
yeah, I was, yeah, totally. I thought that the kid, and I still don't know, I thought the kid lives in a different shitty place. And then like by the end of the show, is he just like hanging with his dad? Cause you know, when you murder someone, you need some parental support.
So I went back and I juxtaposed the opening sequence with the later sequence. I think this is meant forensics. To be like an in-law suite at the house. Okay, right. Okay. And so
the in-law shittiest car in the history of vehicles in the world. The guy's a judge. Yeah. Like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a 1974 Volvo. Yeah, exactly. And you can invent a backstory of like, well, you know, they're upper middle class cause he's a judge. So he's not like super wealthy, but they're not poor. Yeah. But you know, ever since the mom died, he lets the kid live out in the in-law suite and, you know, to teach him responsibility, he's got a car, but it's a shitty car.
I was gonna say, but he's not like, a big fan of his son. So he wants him to die in the worst car ever. Yeah. Like that is a death trap. The sound effects they use. It's like it's just it's nothing.
It is. Yeah. And the show does none of that, right? Like I had to invent all of that in my head. Right?
Yeah.
Like, the show wants you to think because of the hard cut that happens immediately after this that like, oh, we've got super poor kid, right? Because room's total fucking mess. Won't be that way later. There's the thing with the girlfriend and, you know, whatever. And then we hard cut over to a family who apparently lives inside one of the Smithsonian museums. It is 87,000 square feet of art.
Mm-hmm.
It's preposterous.
Yeah.
But it's other than that, it's supposed to be like a meet cute with the family, right? So that the son can explain this one for me. There's the daughter. The daughter looks like 27. We will never see from her again. It took me two viewings to realize she's got to be at a Catholic prep school. Cause when we see her outside, she's got the like, you know, Catholic prep school skirt on.
Sure.
But sitting at the breakfast table, it looks like she's just dressed for the office, right?
Doesn't it feel like they've combined the mafia and drug cartels?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just realizing this now. Yeah, those are kind of different vibes, you know, but they like smashed it into one. Maybe it's a husband-wife team, like husband's drug cartel, wife is like, you know, one of the Sopranos, you know? Like.
Yeah, egalitarian. Yeah, that's right. We'll find out.
It's
Gina's
a two-income. Even, you know, it's a tough economy out there. You got to be – Even drug kingpins got to be drug kingpin.
Do you know what
the
rent is at the Smithsonian? Yeah. So you know
it's a lot.
So the like contrived thing is that he's wearing her T-shirt, and none of that matters. It was like, hey guys, why don't you vamp for a little while? It doesn't have to make sense. But we've learned that the father has bought the son a brand new vintage motorcycle. Brand new vintage motorcycle, right? There's also a bit about the grandmother being born in Scotland, which I think just further goes to show you're confused.
There was? God, I missed that.
Remember the whole Edinburgh thing? That was the whole...
I caught the Edinburgh thing, but I didn't catch the very start of that. So that came up because of that?
Yeah, that came up. Right. And like lots of your drug cartels are based out of Edinburgh. Yeah,
sure.
Anyway, so spoiled little rich kid. His name is Rocco, by the way. He gets the motorcycle for his birthday. Now we get more of the hoodie guy. And
forever.
So hoodie guy is jogging through, you know, what we used to call the projects growing up.
Oh, right? I also wanted to throw in there, you know, we had that little scene with the girl and we got the trademark Showtime almost nudity. I love that. Yeah. We're like, ooh, that's very calibrated, very fine tuned, not nudity that I just saw. Okay.
Egalitarian. Yeah. We got both the girl and the boy butt shots.
And,
so, you know,
right after that, we get the shot that I just have in my notes. Mom has been fridged. I repeat, mom has been fridged. Like you just immediately, as soon as possible, we had to find out mom's been fridged, which is a classic trope that allows you to avoid having to write a female character.
There's not a lot of in the way of female character in this show.
Not in this episode.
So, Not in this episode, we should say that. Yeah. So Hoodie Guy walks up to the house you know, like 13-year-old kid kind of comes to the door and is like, "You the police?" And he shakes his head no. And he's like, "Well, then, you know, get the fuck out of here." Right. And then we cross cut over to, as you said, the mom has been fridged. And so today is the anniversary of mom's
fridging.
Death, which we don't. We're fridging. Right. Yeah.
Which so, happened in the worst neighborhood imaginable. I'm waiting to find out what this is. Like the guy goes to a random intersection that's just – it's abandoned completely / five or six very menacing black people live there. And
I have Tucker Carlson's worst nightmare starts assembling on the street. But,
Yeah. She apparently died in a fucking, oh man, what's the name? What are their name for the cities? Damn it. I ruined my joke. You know, the fucking cities where you get every immigration. What the hell is the,
Sanctuary
City. Yeah. Ruined my joke. But anyway, died of Sanctuary City, I think, is what Tucker Carlson would say. And so he like puts, like, what is going on here?
He's got a little tribute, right? Like, you do the, so
yeah,
he's
but how did she die there? What? I'm sure we'll find out.
I took a note on this. This is Yaya's Market. And it looks like, generic, you know, the scriptwriter was like, you know, generic, urban convenience store, you know, not too ethnic, right, was the screen note here. But he puts a little tribute there, gets into his car, is out of gas because, of course, the script demands it. And then you see him sort of forever. This is the other thing that this show did.
Forever. I agree.
Everything takes forever in this show.
Well, that's what when I said what the plot was, I realized like, oh my God, that was the whole 60 minutes of show. Was that three things that I said, and the rest is slow motion / I guess I don't know if it's slow motion, but just like really meant to be poignant, tense. It doesn't really pull it off most of the time. It just draws everything out.
Yeah. No, and they try and draw out tension with, like, you know, at one point I expected one of the characters to like lean to one of the other and be like, well, don't you hear that music in the background? Like,
well, okay, but let's talk about this scene. The son, apparently the mom died in the middle of, like, I don't know, some the town in Blazing Saddles or something. Like, it's so abandoned, but there's four, you know, someone had to go back and get a shitload of dimes. And there's four or five black guys who are immediately like, no one mourns their dead mom in our block or something, you know, like, and so they're out there like looking menacing. And then the kid has a fucking literal asthma attack.
Yep.
Because he's so scared of black people or something. It's weird, man.
No, that's,
like,
that's how that plays. That absolutely.
And what so is he that? Up, he drives, ever going to find out?
No, he drives around in a circle because he's panicking because the music is telling him to have an asthma attack, which he does. And when he gets back around the circle, he sees that those mean African Americans have smashed his tribute to
of
his
course.
Mom.
Yeah.
By the way, point number one of, I don't know, seven, like, that's an obvious piece of evidence at the crime scene. We're gonna talk about that in a minute. But and so then he drives, and then there's a big menacing, like, you know, Ford Explorer, you know, whatever, black with tinted windows.
Yeah, I love how they threw that in because so he goes nuts over nothing, by the way. And then, like, one of the black dudes pulls a gun on him. Like, all right, you know, okay, are we cool with this? Like, this is how we're depicting that these people in this neighborhood in the morning are going to be? Yep. Like, that's, they're just wake up, pull a gun on a white guy who's just sitting there with a picture of his mom. Like, come on. And then he drives away. And so at that point, I'm like, okay, fine. We've solved this conflict that you've arbitrarily invented, show. Like, just pull over, dude. Pull over. But then they throw in the, oh no, he sees a menacing looking car behind him. So they're like, sorry, it's not enough that we pulled a gun on this white kid in this shitty car. Let's follow him. Like, what? Yeah. What?
Yeah. That makes no sense. And look, this is part of what, you know, caused me to like start scratching beneath, like, and I don't mean a lot, but just right beneath the surface of the show, because obviously you're like, okay, so they're obviously about to, they're trying to create like the most sympathetic perpetrator you can by grafting a billion circumstances onto it. And by the way, making the victim, you know, I don't, it's not even a spoiler because we're now 15 minutes in. So this is, and again, like this just struck me as the like CBS 7 PM movie, you know, like it, he finally crashes into the rich kid on the motorcycle. When he's reaching down beneath the seat to try and get his inhaler.
And what was again, he motorcycling all the way over there for? Like they live in an...
Right. And then we get... And I don't know if you felt this way. Like I've watched a lot of movie, film, you know, TV shows, whatever. It's rare that there's something that's like, it's disturbing enough that I like, it makes me physically uncomfortably watching it. But like the death scene.
Oh yeah. The kid's mangled corpse.
It's 6 minutes long and it's uncomfortable. I could not, I had to watch the show twice to, you know, prep, but I fast forwarded over it the second time. Like there's a bit where like he leans down cause he thinks the kid's going to talk to him and the dying victim, like, you know, pukes blood onto him. And it's just,
more evidence.
It's just bad.
He's like, what'd you say? Evidence for you.
It was,
no, I know it was they really wanted to lean into that gruesome part of it.
And so here's the first, like, viewing this show twice question that I have. Watching it unfold in real time, right, when the show is lying to you and you think in the first 20 minutes, like, oh, well, this is a poor kid living in squalor, drives a 1974 Volvo. Of course he doesn't have a cell phone.
Oh, yeah.
When you know he's the judge's son.
I thought, spoiler. Wait.
Why doesn't he have a fucking cell phone?
No, I think he does. I thought it like got lost in the car. Like that was the same as the somehow the.
I watched it twice. I'm pretty sure that like he that's why he takes the victim's cell phone because he doesn't have one. That's what he calls 911 on.
Yeah.
Everything else. And like there's no either. It's not clear.
Okay. Here's my question. Weren't there two different things in the car he was reaching for? Because they made a lot. We know the inhaler fell under the seat. Right. But he also made a big production of the glove box. And I thought his phone was maybe in there.
Oh, he there is a thing about the glove box, but I never figured out.
Unless
what that
he was,
was
like, I need my license and registration for when I no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, could be
for when the police come.
the other so that now this is, you know, I don't know, evidence piece number three, but like you have to pretend like there's no way around this. You have to pretend as those cell phones do not have GPS.
Yeah,
never minding that they have for the last 30 years.
I know,
right. Yeah, it's just like
you call 911 and and the rest of the show, he's basically like got the phone on 911.
He's driving around with it on, like they occasionally
the operator's like, come hello, what are we? I don't know what to do. It's just been on. It's an hour that I've been driving. You know, I feel like they'd be able to figure something out from that.
You would think, but yeah. So anyway, then the motorcycle kid Rocco dies. Then we cut back over, and now we see Hoodie Guy run up the steps into the world's largest courthouse.
Yeah.
Must be
where all the Earth law happens. Like aliens and...
And right as I wrote the first time through, like, I'm getting real fucking sick of Hoodie Guy. We see, of course, that's our protagonist. So nothing like a show that, you know, is like... waiting for the big reveal. No, of course
it's jogging for 20 minutes of the show. That's not an exaggeration. That's a long
time. That's as long as we've been recording.
In show minutes. Yeah. And they just that show. And then what they do is that I love this too, because it's completely unearned. It's like they forgot that they haven't done a show yet. And they're like, here's what we do. A slow motion shower scene of Bryan Cranston. And you're like, I don't know who this is, show. Yeah. Hello. I know it's Bryan Cranston. Okay, I get it. It's Bryan Cranston. So I'm going to assume he's important at some point. But like, all I've seen is a guy jog. And then you're doing a slow mo. They do the slow motion shower scene close up, you know, like blurred thing of his face as though like he just, I don't know, killed someone and is like dealing with, like, that's how they play it. But
yeah,
he's done nothing. He's jogged. That's all he's done. He's jogged.
Yeah, that is right. Two kind of quick semi-law, because this was also right about the time that I was worried that there wasn't going to be any law in this. So I'm like, shit. Okay, two things. Number one, it would not be unusual for a judge or a court clerk or whatever to like ride their bike to work, and sure, so therefore like come in and change in their office, but in order to avoid the metal detector, you would have to show your ID, right? So there would not be this, like, you know, grand reveal much later. Like, you don't get to just run in the courthouse in your tracksuit. You'd have to stop and either go through the metal detector or show your little ID that says, hey, I'm a judge. and then secondly, in a state courthouse, the judge's chambers probably doesn't have a shower in it. Most courthouses, you know, are sort of tragically underfunded, as we've talked about.
Yeah, it looked like he was in the courthouse locker room. Like, there's the squash court, and then the is that not a thing?
So not, no, I mean, like, not the full gym, but some courts will have you know, some kind of shower facilities in there for
sure.
For the folks. But yeah, my judge's chambers had a private bathroom, but did not have.
What do you mean your judge's chamber? Oh, the one you clerked for?
When I clerked for.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
So no shower.
But I mean, you're in New Orleans, it's humid. You know, maybe
it is humid, fair.
Need a shower.
those courthouses may be you know, shower may be the first thing.
Yeah, mandatory, like between every case shower.
And then we get another one of these, like, works for dramatic purposes, but not if you think about it, where we see the judge's cell phone vibrating because he's in the shower, right? So he can't answer it. Mm-hmm. It's vibrating as the kid calls him for his son, who, by the way, his name is – it's either Adam or Eric. It took me two
– don't care.
It took me two viewings to know that it was one of those two things.
Yeah.
You don't care. You just call him Bryan Cranston's son.
I mean, I got IMDb up. Apparently it's Adam. Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. That's also, I think, part of how you know he's calling on the rich kid's cell phone, because presumably if he was calling on his own phone, it would have said Adam calling. But
yeah,
but who knows? It also could have just been bad writing. All right. Now, but
how would he? Well, okay. If I needed to call anyone without my cell phone, I would not know their number. But
yeah, no, I would.
But
I'd be like,
if he's
two?
A kid, but if he's a kid who doesn't have a cell phone, as is your theory, he would probably have to know the numbers of people's cell phones. So it could go either way. I don't know.
867-5309. Yeah. Anyway,
that would be the only number I could call.
And now we get to the court scene.
The best. Cannot wait.
Oh, my God. Everything about this is it's opposite day. Like,
magical.
Oh, did I message you and tell you that, like, I've got to show my son the opposite of George Seinfeld episode?
Yeah, but it was a total non sequitur. I did not know what you were talking about. But yes,
yeah, no,
that episode is great.
We're getting ready for an atypical tournament this weekend, and as this coming weekend, as you hear this, and as my son was prepping for it, he's like, in order to win this, I just have to do the opposite of everything I usually do at a debate tournament. I'm like, oh, son, set aside 22 minutes because you're about to be entertained.
That's awesome.
And I hope he enjoys it. Anyway, this is the opposite of court. Every single thing is tuna on toast with, you know, like,
so it's weird.
So first you walk in, the biggest thing I want you to know is there is no jury, right? There would be a jury. Oh,
well, okay. So that was my thing. Cause like, instantly the judge, Bryan Cranston, Judge Cranston, starts acting like the prosecutor, or the, I guess the defense attorney.
The defense
and he's like
attorney.
Questioning. Oh, so I'm going God. In my mind, I'm like, okay, I try to make, you know, I'm like, I don't know everything about this, but I know that this seems a little weird, but I'm like, okay, if it's a hearing, then does the judge, like if you're just doing a hearing, does the judge get a little more questiony? But then would you have a witness? Maybe.
You would not have direct. Yeah. No, there's no way. There's no way to
make this work.
Judge Bryan Cranston says in the middle of his defense cross-examination / monologue, if I find this woman guilty, she's going to prison for 5 years.
Yeah. Right?
So in other words, this is some kind of criminal trial. And we have the district attorney there has put his first witness on the stand, who is the cop who is testifying that he saw this woman,
so
you know, hide drugs up her vagina while standing on her porch. Right.
Already, though, think about that.
Yeah.
Think about that. That's what is the crime that because like. Why would that matter? So then did you find the drugs on her or did
yeah, presumably,
like this,
yeah.
Yeah, well, but like this right. testimony would only matter if like the drugs disappeared and the theory of the case is that her vagina ate the drugs. Like they just so like you need to establish that the police officer cause mind you, Bryan Cranston would have us believe that this is critical testimony. Like either this guy's telling the truth and she's guilty or he's lying and she walks. What possible, am I wrong? What possible facts could be like, you need the cop to say she hid the drugs in her vagina in her house?
Yeah,
I'm serious. Think of it. What would that be?
I mean, possession, right? Like it would be, you know.
The evidence would be like, yeah, but okay, it doesn't matter what the dude's testimony was. You found the drugs in her house.
I don't know.
It doesn't make sense.
I'm doing
just
my
acknowledge
best here.
That I'm right, and it makes no fucking sense.
Well, I was going to pile on and say, you know, what's often the case is the first question you ask of the first witness is dispositive of the entire crime.
Oh, really?
No. Yeah, that's not. That's not a thing. So the one tiny, it makes the witness weird, but. I guess is the written in the segue. So the witness testify answers. So DA says, so what happened? And then the witness, the cop says, I saw her, you know, shove the drugs, you know, up inside her, and then finishes and looks over, and might as well like put his heels up on the witness box and be like, that's some pretty good testimony there. Eh, judge?
Yeah.
Like it's so weird. And so, that's why, I flagged for you, there's no jury, because again, this witness would be directing his testimony to the jury. But instead,
he's like, well, no one else is here. How about a judge? You think that was cool?
So look, a judge can ask clarifying questions of a witness. It doesn't happen very often.
It's so good.
Does not happen is Judge Bryan Cranston stands up.
Yep.
That comes out from behind the bench.
Yep.
And starts cross-examining the witness, right? It's as glorious as your giggling
he
suggests.
He gets up and plays lawyer. Like he's like, I'm going to just be the defense
you
for fun.
You could give these lines he's to the
just,
lawyer.
Yeah, he's not just asking questions from the bench, which already would have been, you know, the level of questions he's asking would have been like kind of ridiculous. He gets down and walks around. He's like, I'm just going to Perry Mason this for a minute, if you don't mind. Yes, I am the judge, and this makes no fucking sense, but go with me here.
Yeah, I sure hope the judge is by. Oh, wait, that's me.
Okay. Yeah. Is there an actual defense attorney anywhere in this courtroom?
There is, remember, and he's defense attorney foreshadowing, right? He comes in, he's late, and Judge Bryan Cranston is like, well, you were late yesterday. And then the defense counsel's like, well, yeah, because I have prostate cancer and I have to go to the bathroom every 15 minutes. That's not foreshadowing in any way whatsoever. Yes, it is. Yeah,
I don't even know if I would call it foreshadowing.
Clumsily planting something that
will
that come
can
back.
Later be used. It's Chekhov's prostate.
Chekhov's prostate. if it doesn't go off in the third act.
Exactly.
Oh, so yes.
That's kind of right. Come on, give me that one. That's not bad.
That's really good. That's really good. I like it. Again, you could have given these lines to defense counsel.
Yeah.
It would have made this... it would have made the whole show. I would have been like, oh, okay, yeah, fine.
No, they tried to make Bryan Cranston literally be Perry Mason, but as a judge.
But as the
you know how Perry Mason already doesn't make any fucking sense? Try that, plus now he's also the judge. He's the judge. And he does the, well, I actually, he does the fucking 12 Angry Men guy bought the knife thing.
Well, before he does that,
okay,
he... He calls, he walks around in front and he's like, well, that's a right pretty story there. So, I want to call, you know, Raymond, can you come forward here? Whatever the hell the kid's name is.
Yeah.
And the kid that we saw earlier, he has him come down to the well, not under oath, and is like, and ask the kid a few questions in the middle of cross-examining the witness who's up there on direct. Meanwhile, like, the prosecutor
is He's like, let's get some audience participation. Can I get an occupation and a city that you, like, just getting people involved?
The prosecutor is just standing there dumbfounded. Prostate cancer defense counsel is just like, well, it does. In fairness, that's what you would do.
Yeah, shut the fuck up.
Yep. A judge wants to take my job for the day. Okay, I'm good with that. I still get credit.
I think that's a good omen for my case. If the judge is going to like take part in the defense.
So asks Raymond, like, hey, what'd you eat for breakfast today? And he said, well, I drank some pickle juice.
Pickle juice. He's like, hey, black kid, where's your father? This show is very good. It's not racist at all. We've already done several, like, I don't know what the show is trying to do. I don't know if it's because sometimes it's like, oh, you're trying to make a racist character. Fine. I get it. You're making a racist character. Okay. They're going to be racist. This one, it's like, I think he's supposed to be like a hero.
Oh, yeah, clearly. Yeah.
The earlier his son is afraid of black people existing, and I'm just like, maybe we'll find out what that means
Maybe. I'm betting on the under on that one. But anyway, so gets Raymond to testify that, you know, they live in poverty and the father's gone and everything. And that's when the judge looks at the witness, still there on direct, and is like, so, you know, if I find this woman guilty, I'm going to sentence her. She's going to go to prison for more than 5 years, and her kids are going to get taken away. And, you know, that young kid you just heard from is probably going to wind up selling drugs. You still want to stick with your testimony. And the police officer says, yep.
Yeah.
And then
really,
and then
that kid won't have any pickle juice to drink anymore after
And then we get, well, you're very, very convincing witness, and I would be totally convinced if not for the fact that I'm the naughty guy.
Oh, one more thing. Yeah.
It really is. It's like
Pretty much the
Perry Mason / Columbo / one more. Oh, my God.
As the judge, it's already stupid when it's the attorney in all these shows. And it's like, okay, we'll put up with it because it's a fucking show. I get it. But it's the judge. It's
And so we learn. So he says, and again, if you're scratching at, is there any possibility on this? You know, a court can take judicial notice of certain facts, but. So the judge says, so I happen to be down at the murder at the house that, you know, and I looked in and it's what we call a shotgun house. By the way, I went to Wikipedia, looked that up. Apparently that is an actual like New Orleans thing.
I've heard of shotgun house. Well, I think that's an everywhere thing, isn't it?
I've never heard that phrase before. So
I have
plenty of houses that I.
Most things in the world you know and I don't, but this is a thing that I think I've heard before.
That's a thing you knew and I didn't. So
I wouldn't say I knew exactly, but I've heard it.
So anyway, it's a shotgun house, which means the if you look through the front door, you can see out the back door because all the other rooms are off on the side. And since it's a shotgun house, he obviously couldn't have seen the woman in the bathroom. And so therefore, case closed. Although he's the judge. So, so we cross cut from that then.
Come on. I know we're done with this, but like, can you please tell me how this would make any fucking sense? Even just the crime. Cause like, okay, turns out get rid of that witness. What would be left? What would the crime be? Possession. Okay. The evidence was just that a police officer saw her in her house, put something like we're assuming we don't have the thing that she put in her vagina. Otherwise, then that's you just have that.
Right? You would need it. That's right. I mean, yeah. I suppose.
So couldn't the defense be like, I was using a tampon. What are you talking about? Yeah, like, unless there's no way.
Especially because we don't have the explanation for why the cop was on the porch in the first place, right?
What the fuck? Like, it's the
if he was executing
the laziest,
a search warrant.
Stupid writing.
They didn't think about this. They just didn't.
They just we took things that are like, oh, this is a crime thing, right? People shove shit up there. Yeah, seems like criminal related matter. Let's go with that.
Again, and maybe it just wears more heavily on me because it's my profession, but like, you know, I've written fiction before, right? I have an unfinished novel.
Wait, fiction.
I've written some fiction before, yeah.
Plus, we're gonna make our better Lot Awful movie. Our Law
obviously,
is a great movie.
I love all that. Like, if I decided to make my protagonist an architect, like I wouldn't just be like, I'm sure I could wing architect.
Wikipedia, architect.
just have him like in on the like, you know, big design and I'll have my architect character like wander around and be like, we definitely need one of those dangly down thingies.
I would have him be a gargoyle like from one of those building whatevers. I know. It's so dumb. I wanted the prosecutor to be like, hey, Your Honor, we could just get rid of this. Doesn't matter to the case. Like, wait, we recovered the drugs from her. So this is nothing. I know you're doing a whole Perry Mason thing, but we can just fine. Just strike him, strike him from the right. It was my first witness, which is a warm up witness. Didn't even matter.
Oh my God. If that had happened, if the DA, the prosecutor had come forward and been like, Your Honor, are you finished?
Respectfully,
move to withdraw this witness and we'll stipulate that that guy is nuts. Can I then get on with my case? That would be amazing. So all of this would be like trying to persuade the jury. But again, apparently this is a bench trial.
There's no jury. Yeah.
There's no jury. So
that's what I said. So he could just say, instead of saying, oh, if I've, are you, do you want to stick? Couldn't he just be like, yeah, no, I don't really. That doesn't make sense to me. I rule that
she's
innocent.
I don't find your testimony credible. That's right. Because when you sit without a jury as the judge, you then get to decide the facts as well as the law. And you could just say what a jury is free to say, which is, yeah, we didn't find that testimony credible.
Yep. End of scene. God, it's so bad. Just look, I know we could do all this work, hard billable hours of work of Andrew figuring out how this could possibly make sense. Or you could just write your show better. Have him be the I know you want to call it Your Honor is the problem. You really want to call it that? I bet you that's what it was. You like it made sense as a lawyer, like as the attorney, you know, as the defense attorney, but they wanted to name the show Your Honor, so well, just make him be the judge and then just still do the defense attorney thing. Don't you think? Like what
it is kind of the like you know, on CSI, how like, you know, the evidence techs who are scientists also have to be like,
we
carry firearms and we track down the criminals, and, you know, and you're like, no, dude, like you're an organic chemist.
Yeah, you do one thing at the crime scene.
You take reagent A and mix it with chemical B, okay?
Yes or no, like positive or negative test.
And like, then you hold up the test tube and you're like, does that look bluish green or greenish blue to you? Yeah.
And then you email someone and that's it.
Yeah.
You're like, here's the results.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, all right. Totally. Oh, after that,
magic,
11-hour
God, that
court scene.
Him getting down off the bench and fucking walking around.
Yeah.
Has that ever happened, Andrew?
And of course it doesn't. Like,
the
why
biggest power move in the world is being a judge and sitting up there in your fucking tower.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like being able to look down on the plebs who are arguing their case before you. And then you say, well, my solution is I'll split the baby in half. And then you say which one of them cries. And whoever's crying more, they get, you know, that's being a judge. Not walking down among the commoners.
And you have the little button up there, right? You can
the white noise button.
Yeah, the white noise button.
Oh, yeah. Has any judge ever been like, I'm going to put some AC/DC on that button? Just it works just as well. Oh,
God. That would be so great. A little Back in Black.
Well, that has too much quiet in between the guitar riffs, you know? So it'd be like, and then you'd be like, yeah, I think this witness, yeah, no, not credible. Yeah, I think you're full of shit here.
Oh, okay, all right. I'm going to have to come up with the best heavy metal white noise for our in our remake of this, right? Judge Bryan Cranston. See, again, like think of how good this would have been. Like, they could have had him back there. Like, he could have had a jury. You could have had the defense counsel doing all this. You could have had him go push the white noise button. It plays a little Slayer instead. Like, we would know this is a cool judge. Anyway, all right. All that's gone. None of that happened.
Yeah, instead, now we're done with the worst fun
courtroom
part.
Scene. Yeah. And now we get the kid. We get more of like showing how this is why I'm saying, like, I don't see how they're more than two episodes, because the kid leaves a lot of evidence just like for there being evidence. Right. So now he's at a gas station and we're sure to, like, you know, pan for a long time on the security cameras. More of that, like, fake tension. You know, there's the, like, guy, the, like, asshole behind him honking his horn, being like,
yeah, and he, like, shows himself to that guy, obviously. Like, you're just ticking off all the boxes of evidence that we're gonna see later on or something.
And then he drives over to the river and throws the cell phone into the river, because, you know, things that go to the river never come back. That's right. And now we have yet another, right? So we were waiting through the first four scenes of the movie for Adam to meet up with Rocco, the kid on the motorcycle. Now we're waiting for Adam to meet up with Judge Bryan Cranston. And here's where it happens. Here's where it all pays off. And this is where the show rewrites itself, right? Like, this house is way more upscale than when Adam left it 25 minutes ago, now that we know that it's the judge's house, right?
I swear to you, maybe he lives in a different place. Like, I see your argument, but I also think maybe he lives somewhere else and he just came to his dad's house. Either way, I'm frustrated with it. I'm not saying you're wrong. It's a weird thing. But yeah, it makes no sense otherwise.
Yeah. Well, and then we get and by the way, this was to me, it felt like this scene was edited in, like that somebody watched the entirety of this as a pilot and was like, do we come off a little bit racist? And someone was like, I got you covered.
Yeah.
I got this covered. So what we're going to do is we're going to add in a new scene. You're going to find me two African-American males. Do they have to act? No, they do not. One of them will be running for mayor. Can you get him a straw hat?
That guy's from – is that – oh, shit. Hold on. What's that guy from? Well, anyway.
I don't know, but this was – if he is an actor, then this is truly phoning it in, because they do a walk and talk.
Yeah, it wasn't good. Yeah, I agree with you. But he's an actor.
In which that real actor looks over and says, hi, I am on this TV show, and you, Bryan Cranston, protagonist of this TV show, have saved my life. And scene.
No, he's Wire man. He's the guy who says, isn't he the guy? I'm mixing up my Wire character. Yeah, he's the guy who says, shit. It's that guy. It's Clay Davis in The Wire.
This scene, I dare anybody go watch the scene.
No, I 100% agree with you. He sucked in this scene. It's not a good
– this is 25 weird. Minutes in, and this is as much of the, like, you know, Calculon does one take that I have seen, right?
Wholeheartedly agree. But I was questioning myself just because you didn't recognize him. But yeah, that's that guy. Oh. But that's the difference between, honestly, a genius like David Simon – and whoever wrote this thing, is that you can make even people who maybe aren't that great look amazing. Or maybe the guy is a good actor, but the director's so bad that they made him look shitty. I don't know. It's hard to know. But I agree with you. It sucked. Like, it seems so phoned in, you know, like, yeah, I agree.
Yep. And then for good measure, right? This is, this is my real theory that they added this scene later to like kind of, you know, it up a little bit. Like, we have Bryan Cranston on his way out of the courthouse say hi to another African American.
Yeah.
And those are the only two people of color that we will see for the rest of the show.
Yeah, they're just there to establish the cred of Bryan Cranston as the cool, like, judge that's racially, by jogging over to the shotgun house and, like, doing a little investigating.
Yep, that's it. So now Dad's taking an Uber home, and I've elided over like the kid scrubbing up and all of that because, you know, what's there to say? Like, the kid starts cleaning his clothes and shit and doing a terrible job of it, and he's wrecked the washing machine, and there's a comical amount of water on the floor.
Oh my God. So this is, I'm so sorry. I fucking hate this kid. Like, I really do. Like, I get maybe they're playing up the trauma part of it.
Probably.
But, like, come on, man. It becomes a fucking, I don't know, a Disney cartoon where, you know, or it becomes like the beginning of Roger Rabbit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, where everything, like the movie Roger Rabbit, where everything goes, you know. He's trying to wash
his
bloody fucking murder clothes, and he somehow both Lydia and I were like, what did he even do? What is the explanation for the, by the way, really nice washer and dryer, which I noted. I was like, wait, that's way too nice a washer and dryer. And then we're like, oh, he's at the judge's house. It's a different house. So we had the same argument, by the way, Lydia. Oh no, he's at Bryan Cranston's house. That's way too nice a washer and dryer. So we're to believe that he flooded the whole house by doing laundry? Like, what is the thing that he's supposed to have done that flooded? You can't do laundry that badly with a modern machine. There's no way to do that.
Challenge accepted.
I'm serious. What is it? Explain this to me. Lydia was sitting there like, were they trying to make it like he put too much soap in? Like, because they showed it, you know, like
they do show him pouring a comical amount of soap in, but then they do not show the payoff on that, which is we should all get the yucks of like it overflows with bubbles, right? But no, what we get is four inches of water on the floor. Right?
How does that happen? That doesn't happen.
It does not happen. It's nonsense.
Hacky shit. Gotta hate it.
And I made the same notes because, again, remember, we're trying to reconcile like the detached bedroom that the kid lives in that in scene one was fucking squalor.
Yep.
And now, like, you're looking and I'm going like, that is the nicest washer and dryer set. Like, I'm like, God, I'd kind of like that washer and dryer set.
Yeah.
Way better than mine. And when we get back in the bedroom, and by the way, this is how you know it's not just he's visiting, because when the dad tracks him through the house, he walks out back and goes into the in-law suite, and the dad is
in. Oh, he does?
Yeah. And that's where they have the first heart-to-heart.
I'm so with you on the trying to fucking – why do the trickery in the beginning? I feel like the only reason you're trying to do that in the beginning is to hide – the plot point that you are advertising is your show. You know what I mean? Like, I hate when shows do that. Why don't they okay, the marketing for the show is a judge's son kills somebody, and then you're going to be like, let's spend 20 minutes trying to redirect. Like, that's not the judge's son. It's like, but we already know. You told – that's why I'm here. I saw your ad for the show. I already know that. Why are you wasting so much film trying to convince me of something that your ads told me is already – you know, like, what? God, mind-blowing to me.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm with you. The other purpose, I think, is that by doing that, they can try and heighten the difference, right? When you see Rocco as like, you know, the truly rich kid. And so like in your mind, you're like, well, you know, I'm not saying I want that kid to get violently murdered, but like, you know, if he does and happens to die horribly, I won't feel that bad about it. Right. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about it. But all of that being said, I have to say the confession scene, right? Mm-hmm. The very first one, this is my one genuine scene in the movie that I really, really in the show that I really, really liked that struck 100% home that because I think they're trying to show you that, like, right. You see him, you see Adam starting to tell Bryan Cranston the story, and then Bryan Cranston immediately starts approaching it like a lawyer. Right.
Right.
And I think you're supposed to think like, well, that's foreshadowing for how, and you're supposed to, but like, because, you know, he's not just, he's prompting his son, right? He's asking details in sort of leading question kind of way.
Yeah.
And I just want to tell you, like, as a lawyer, like, that's 100% like the way in which you would approach it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, because you can't help it.
You can't help it. Yeah.
I do this all the time. Like, when you and I are on the show, I'll be like this, and then I'll stop and I'll be like, well, let me not ask that as a leading question. Right. Like, and you hear me do that because that's my natural approach, because I've been doing this for the entirety of my adult life. And like, it's kind of hard to shut that off. And so,
yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
That was a great scene, and this is where I had the one note where I said, well, I mean, Bryan Cranston is still one of the best actors alive, so that helps your show a bit. Like, that's – I had all these complaints, and I was like, all right, well, this scene was good.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. I thought it was really, really good. I really, really liked it.
And this is where – but I also have a lot of caps where I love that, like, we kind of got things going to reality. I don't know what the drama term for that is, but, you know, like, Bryan Cranston gets to be the stand-in for, you know, like, us for a second. Because the son's like, so I killed someone. Takes him an hour, by the way, to be like, oh, so what did the ambulance say? Oh, what did the, you know, like, Bryan Cranston's asking all the questions. Oh, so which hospital did, oh, and then he gets to the point where he's like, oh, wait, so you killed a kid and left him there? Is that what I'm hearing? Oh, my God. You know, like, and we get to that point, which is nice. And he's like, you drove away. Okay. And then the kid says, like, we're going to the police station, aren't we? And I wrote, yes, we follow a don't murder people rule in this house, buddy, as long as you're under my roof. You know, like, yes, of course we're going to the police, you fucking idiot. Yes. God. So we got a little bit of that. But it's still, like, he's still bending over backwards in the scene for his kid. And I'm just like, what are you talking about? You killed a person and just left. Are you, am I nuts, Andrew? Like, where is this coming from? Come on. Everybody listening. If you ever kill somebody on the road, don't leave. I don't know why I need to say this. Like, I get that in this one instance, it turned out to be a drug kingpin's son. So maybe it was maybe for the best, but like that was one out of a zillion. Yeah. Spoilers for the thing that was in the promo for the, yeah, got it.
Yeah. But yes, that is what we're ultimately going to find out. But yeah, yeah. So now the kid says, we're going to have to go to the police station. And now we see Bryan Cranston doing. So this is the thing that I found frustrating, right? Is that, like, in Breaking Bad, like, he breaks bad, right? Yeah. Like, in Better Call Saul, like, there's Saul. Right. There's like, he does call Salt, but there's like a season, right? You go several episodes before he does anything even remotely shady, right? Like it's showing the arc here. And here, like, the arc is 4 minutes long, right? Because this is the pre-arc. This is, okay, I'm a judge. I'm going to do everything that an upper middle class white parent would do with knowledge of the law would do to protect their kid. Right. So, do I know the, like, most sympathetic detective? Yep. Yes, I do. That's who we're going to turn him into. Am I going to call the best defense lawyer I know? Yep. That's what. Right. And all of that is, like, I would have liked all of that if it had lasted for more than 4 minutes. We do have some more shitty writing.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean
to. No. Go ahead. You do you.
Well, because all of a sudden it's nighttime. Like, he gets home. I guess we're to assume it's a hard day's lawyering or whatever, but it's light. And I want to know why it wasn't, oh, you killed somebody. Let's go now. Like, would that look good as a lawyer? I mean, I guess if we're buying into the fact that, like, he's gathering his, you know, thoughts and trying to make sure he does this as a lawyer. But if we're still in the Bryan Cranston is an upstanding judge going to do his best in this situation with the shit hand he's been dealt of this worthless son who killed somebody and then can't even wash the clothes properly. But anyway, all that takes into the night. And then they drive to like the other side of the country to turn him in. I was like, are they doing a one weird trick where it's like, see, turn yourself in another state and they can't prosecute you.
So let me answer all of that. In general, the turning yourself in the day of the crime, like I don't think there's any like the 3 hours is going to make a big difference. Okay. So I think that's fine. I think they're sort of playing fast and loose with the time frame because it's not that well written. And I was just going to mention some of the like really badly like just kludged lines in here, right? Like, so there's this terrible line when Judge Bryan Cranston is leaving a message for the detective and he's spelling his last name and he's like, yes, that's spelled like the judge, right? Which like, and B, it's going to contradict everything that happens in the next 10 minutes when nobody knows who the fuck this guy is, right? Like, either he's a celebrity and everybody knows him, or he's not. And I'm betting throughout this, we're going to have that level of inconsistency. And then we also have, like, Bryan Cranston is like, okay, well, tell him to call me as he walks up, you know, for he and his son to get in the car. And his son says, wow, who were you calling, Dad? So that Bryan Cranston can say, I was calling a lawyer. And then the kid can ask, well, what do you mean by lawyered up? And it's just like, what are you talking about? Like,
are you related to me?
yeah, right. Like, you've grown up in the judge's household. You know what being lawyered up means.
Yeah.
You don't. There's no reason. My dog is mad about this. I know.
This is a lot of movies. So fuck it. We do it live. We talk through the dogging.
We're
getting dogged, folks.
Ordinarily, we would edit this out, but you get a little honest Lily there. The whole thing plays wrong. And like, why would you ask your dad, like, it's who so are you dumb. Calling there? Like, you're about to go to prison. It's just, so let's speak to that. All right. So we get through all that. The kid's like, can we take the dog in the car so that I can say goodbye before, you know, never seeing you guys again? And, you know, and. Good dad, Bryan Cranston.
Does that even make sense? So what's going to happen? Like, okay, presumably, forget all the stupid thing of the show, the drug thing. They're going to go and say whatever. But like, it's not like he would just go straight to prison. What is that about?
No, of course.
I mean, it's a vehicular manslaughter. Well,
and we get that. And this is the only other bit of law. So I actually did, again, some research for this. We're driving down to the police station to turn himself in. Mm-hmm. And Adam looks at his dad and says, will I get bail? And his dad says, no, probably not. And the answer is yes, definitely.
Of course you would.
Like, you would.
Kyle fucking Rittenhouse is out on bail. They can't even, like, he can lie to them. He can do whatever. He can hide, give them the wrong address. Doesn't matter. God, will I make bail for hitting someone with your car as a white son of a judge? Yeah, I think you'll make bail.
I think you'll be fine. Yeah. And I actually looked up because again, the general principles of bail are the same elsewhere, the same everywhere, right? Which is, basically the two things are, are you a flight risk? Are you unlikely to show up to trial? And or are you, a threat, right?
Yeah.
And so you look at those
kind of a judge and son of a judge. So
yeah, no, right. Yeah. So here's what this is. Louisiana Code of Criminal Procedure, Article 313 says in determining whether the defendant should be admitted to bail pending trial, the judge or magistrate shall consider the following: A, the criminal history of the defendant. Everything we're led to believe here is none. Right. B, the potential threat or danger the defendant poses to the victim. Well, none, because he's dead. The family of the victim. None. Or to any member of the public, especially children. None.
I mean, would you be like, bail, but also you can't fucking drive?
You can't drive. You can take a license. Sure. Documented history or records of any of the following: substance abuse, threats of suicide, use of force or threats of use of force against any victim, strangulation, forced sex, or controlling the activities of any victim by the defendant, or threats to kill. Documented history or records may include but are not limited to sworn affidavits, police reports, and medical records.
He hit that inhaler pretty hard. Is that a substance abuse issue? Yeah. I'm not sure.
Oh, can we talk about it anyway? All right. So this kid is totally getting bail. There are no stakes, but we have to pretend that there are. And now we arrive at the police station, and this may be the worst.
It's so bad.
Done scene, right?
Yep.
Because
I'm glad we agree on this.
So you talk about it. Yeah.
Well. In the pitch black night of somehow like a midnight that we've got, I don't know where all the time went, but he probably went for another jog and they had to cut jogging for another 4 hours. But anyway, he walks into the police station, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. We get nothing. There's not a TV on. There's not anything. All we get is he looks to his right and he sees, and the police station, by the way, not the hospital or anything like that. We see the drug kingpin and his wife crying. That's it. That's all we get. And then he goes out and he's like, get back in the car. Get back in the car, son. That person you killed, there's only one explanation for this. It's not like, oh, maybe the drug kingpin's son died in a shooting or a drive-by or anything. Nope. There is exactly one dead person in the city of New Orleans, and it's the son you killed. And I saw the drug kingpin crying with his wife, so that means you killed their son. That's the only explanation. Get in the car. Let's go.
You're 100% right on all of that, but also this scene is so badly shot, and there's like plexiglass through it that like I get that Bryan Cranston instantly recognized the drug kingpin.
Yeah,
but I hadn't seen them for like 35 minutes, and I had no idea who the hell they were. Like, they're not easily identifiable people. Like, he doesn't have like a face tattoo or like, you know, dress flamboyantly, and like the wife just perfectly looks like, you know, middle-aged woman number six. Like it nothing about these people. I was just like, wait,
well, okay, but I mean, that it was obvious that that's who they were. I mean, I of all the criticisms of the scene, like that's that's not one that I had. Like, I get it. Like, I'll take for granted that he recognizes the drug kingpin people for some reason.
All right, but
the idea the that they're only give me 1 second of a scene. Give me a TV. Maybe the TV's on and it's car accident. Kingpin son. Give me something. Give me overheard mumbling of an officer being like, yeah, that drug kingpin's son was killed on his motorcycle. Yeah, it's outside. Nope. Bryan Cranston just knows. You know how stupid that is? Wouldn't your first thought be like, oh, man, I bet the drug kingpin, the drug lord's son might have gotten caught in some crossfire of drug-related crimes. Not like, oh, my son definitely killed that guy with his car. That's the only explanation.
Yep. Yep, but no, we have to do that for the weird, you know, plot to work. We also get the weird, like, nobody in the police precinct recognizes him. The chief comes out and calls out Mike, which is Bryan Cranston's name, but he's calling his detective instead. But earlier, like, the receptionist is like, oh, you mean Cranston, like the famous judge, Bryan Cranston? Like,
hey, everybody, a judge is coming in. Get prepared. We're good. Look alive. Judge Bryan Cranston is coming in the station later.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. They get to play that whichever way they want. Like, if they want him to be recognized, he's recognized. If they don't, then he's not.
So this is the scene in which now, I mean, like I said, it's two scenes later and he's broken bad. So
like, okay, I'll give him that. Again, my biggest criticism is, come on, like, his first assumption is going to be that this is the same thing. Does he think he's a judge? He knows how much crime goes on. Like, does he think there's only one other event in this city of New Orleans that night? Like, there's one total event. But that's my biggest criticism. But like, assuming, put yourself in Judge Cranston's shoes here. I mean, okay, let's assume your son did accidentally kill a drunk kingpin's son. Like, I could see that. Or would he think like, all right, well, we're going to get you into protection something, you know, like, what, you'll go in, you'll say this happened, but I'm really scared for my son's life. Can we somehow, you know, what do you think a judge would actually do?
You would I mean, if you're the kind of judge that gets up off the bench and grandstands to the courtroom, who knows? But you're being led to believe this is an upstanding, but also by the books judge, right? Like a compassionate humanitarian, whatever. And like you're in the same way that the scene with his son played so real, right? Like you would approach this from analyzing it from a lawyer perspective, that's also the very first thing you would think of, right? You'd be thinking of all of the legal alternatives that you would exhaust, right, before you would start breaking bail, right? Like, of course you would.
At least give us a scene. Okay, take out 45 minutes of jogging and shower scenes you don't need. Give him a scene. Have him – here's the thing. Have Judge Cranston go into the bathroom and give us some sort of conflicted, like, oh, fuck, or give it – or something, or maybe have him talk to the son. Give him something of, like – justify the fact that he's like, yes, everything in my being is telling me obviously we have to do the right thing here, but like, what if they just are going to kill you? Like, what if the drug guy is just going to murder my son? Like, I cannot have that happen. Like, at least show us the conflict. I'm with you that he's just like, well, get back in the car. Murder never happened. We're going home. Let's watch Shawshank.
How about how about this? Like, instead of establishing his cred as a liberal bleeding heart, like, why not make Bryan Cranston like Hang'em Cranston on the bench, like, and show in the first 10 minutes?
We got Hang'em Cranston.
Right. Show in the first 10 minutes of like him getting rid of a particular kind of like police custody program or, you know, right. Like make.
Yeah, maybe.
Close those doors.
I mean, they want him to be. They want him to be like sympathetic, you know, they want.
Yeah. But you could be sympathetic and like out of touch. Right. Like, I don't know. But
not
whatever.
In today's media.
Yeah. Not in today's media. But and in any event, it doesn't matter what we think because we get home and we have my favorite trope from law movies.
This.
We have KXP, all exposition TV all the time on. And not only is it on, but like the volume increases, right? So Bryan Cranston is over at the laundry. And again, I know that his washer dryer is that like, you know, super upscale, you know, Kenmore edition, but like you can't hear the TV when you're standing next to the washing machine. You fucking can't. The volume goes up and we get the TV report like it does saying, and tragically, a 17-year-old was killed in the downtown, you know, the shitty part of New Orleans today.
And
we think, by the way, that his dad is into organized crime. You know,
I know.
Like you do.
Okay. Look, I've been waiting this whole time to ask this. Call me naive, whatever, precious cinnamon bun, whatever. How many high-profile suspected drug kingpins are there that just like – exist in society and everybody's like, yeah, no, that's a drug lord. But they also have a mansion and like would be interviewed by a local news crew if their son died and be like, hey, drug kingpin, what do you think? You know, like, is that how that goes? I mean, call me naive, but I feel like you either fly under the radar and so you're getting away with crime. That's what I think it is. Like maybe the authorities might have suspicions of you, but it's not like the whole society is like, oh yeah, that's a drug kingpin. He lives in the big house over on whatever in something Avenue. Like what am I wrong on that? Like, is that a real thing, Andrew? Maybe the mafia, maybe the New York, you know, like that kind of like the people Rudy put away, maybe those people, but not like Louisiana crime. Family. I don't get it.
It's funny that you say that because because the only exception that I can think of was when I was living in Massachusetts, right?
Hmm.
And
Elizabeth Warren. Everybody knew it. No, I'm just kidding.
No. At the time, right, there was a well-known mafia boss named Whitey Bulger, right?
Yeah.
And the reason he was well-known. Whitey Bulger, right? Whitey Bulger's brothers, right, were like acted like one was, I want to say like, I, maybe even Speaker of the House of the like State House in Massachusetts. Like, right. And they would just say like, okay. And, Billy Bulger today, like, no, and the news would be like, you know, that's Whitey Bulger's brother. And like, everybody just seemed to think that this was totally normal. And it was batshit crazy. Like he was, I just did a
couple. But what, that's why I say they've combined the mafia and the drug cartel. Really good. That's two different things. Like and maybe there's actually kind of a level of racism in there, like white people, mafia crime. They're like, oh yeah, that's the drug. That's that guy. But like when we think of, you know, drug cartel, it's like, oh my God, you know, we got to fucking kill these people. That can't exist in our society. You know, kind of interesting.
Yeah. What is that? What is the, like, what's the gang? Like X13 or whatever?
Oh, yeah. MS-13.
MS-13? I don't know. Something like that. Yeah. I did a quick look. Yeah. Billy Bulger, president of the Massachusetts Senate, then retired, is now president of the University of Massachusetts school system, right? All of the satellite campuses. And his brother is Whitey Bulger. So you just sit there thinking, like, I suppose it's possible that he didn't, but come the fuck on. Come the fuck on.
That is really funny.
Yeah. And it was the strangest thing when I lived there, and like everybody was just like, yeah, Senate President, Billy Bulger. And you're like, I would just kind of look around and be like, this doesn't strike anyone else as weird.
So that's one example in history, and it's a white person in Massachusetts.
And it's a white person. Yeah. In Massachusetts. Exactly. So,
but I could be wrong, but I just don't really feel like this is how this tends to work. I mean, you can think of one example, but.
And here's the other thing. When you interview the guy that you've just had to say, like, well, he's probably totally into organized crime.
Yeah.
And then they put you on TV and you look menacingly into the camera and are like, wherever
we will
you
find
are,
you.
Yeah. You're going to be found. You're like, oh, did that come off? I can see why that came off a little organized crimey. Like, okay, my bad. Like, I wanted him to be like, can we do a second take on that?
No, but then Ted Cruz will be like, no, he's just saying the authorities will find. There's nothing in that. No implicit threat there.
Oh, that is the world in which we live. Mm-hmm. That is the world in which we live.
So,
okay.
But we're about at the end. But the end of this show is hilarity to me, because all we get is a sequence of, I know this read, I'm sure, was meant to read as like stressed out judge father tries to, you know, help bury the evidence. But all I got is like, in my mind, it's Bryan Cranston going like, what the fuck did you do to the washing machine? Like, what is going on? And then in my mind, his internal monologue is like, I couldn't have one of those murderer sons who's more competent. I had to have the fucking incompetent murderer sons who can't even fucking get rid of his own evidence. And I'm thinking, this is a real indictment of the me generation. Your fucking dad is covering up your crimes for you. Come on. I get that you probably live at home due to the crushing school and medical debt, maybe, but pull your weight around here. Bury your own bodies. My parents would not have buried the bodies for me. I would have had to carry my own bodies uphill in the snow both ways. You know, that's the spirit of this scene for me.
There was definitely a helicopter parenting thing kind of going on.
He's just doing everything for him. And then meanwhile, his son's watching Shawshank without him. The movie that he said earlier, like, okay, we'll watch some Shawshank. After this whole murder thing, we'll watch some Shawshank. And he's just fucking slaving away like Cinderella, scrubbing the fucking hearth or whatever, like of all the blood, you know? And then his son's just watching Shawshank. And then he sits down with him and he gives him the old, buried your body for you, son, you know, like nudge to the legs that I can't wait. That's a moment that every father and son, I can't wait until Arlo and I share that little moment someday. But isn't that weird? Like he just does it all for him. I just thought it was so funny. I wanted some boomer comedy of like, back in my day, you know, like
we disposed of our own bodies and we liked it. Yeah. No, I sort of liked parts of the scene, right? Because as the but the more I thought about it, the worse it became. But what I liked was it was like the judge through adult lawyer eyes starts to realize just how much evidence there is.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Just what a half-assed job his son has done of getting rid of. Yeah, we haven't even talked about the nosy neighbor or anything yet. Oh, and God. So like there's this kind of building where like Bryan Cranston goes to throw it away, and then he realizes kid threw stuff away, and then he discovers the damage on the car, and then he discovers the blood in the car, and he stops to clean that, and that, like, kind of things spiraling out of control, like I kind of liked it. And then they have the fucking dog run off with one of the bloody rags and bury it under the ottoman, and it was just, I was like, all right, we've hit, like, Three's Company levels of stupid here. Like, no, like, stop that. But yeah, Bryan Cranston goes, throws the trash bag off the bridge.
It would have turned into my favorite show in the world if we could have gotten just a little passive aggressive. Bryan Cranston, like, hey, I know traumatic day and everything, and you know, it's the asthma or whatever, but, could help with some of it, you know, like, this is, again, I feel like, you never clean your room. I haven't said anything but you know, when it comes to murder, I feel like you could try to pull your weight a little bit around here, buddy. Like just a little, you know, just a little bit of that would have been fucking hilarious. I'll tell you what, what's his name? The brilliant creator of Breaking Bad would have done it. He would have thrown in a little bit, just a little something for me.
Oh yeah.
What's that guy's name again? I always forget.
I don't know, but
God,
that's,
I love that guy.
That would definitely have been in a Better Call Saul. Like,
yeah, I'm just gonna look it up because I always forget. Okay, he has a very distinct name that
I will.
Remember.
While you're looking that up, I will tell you. Bryan Cranston goes to the bridge in Louisiana. I guess everybody knows there's just the one, I suppose that's the Mississippi River they're throwing stuff into. But like, I don't know when Adam
Vince Gilligan. That's what it is.
Oh yeah. So, but when Adam was throwing the cell phone into it, we see the bridge in the background. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know. The river looked pretty stagnant to me, and like 200 feet across, and like it did not strike me as the mighty Mississippi. That's all I have to say. But I think that's what it's supposed to be. I think I'll ask Morgan, like, what's that magic bridge in New Orleans? He's got it in a trash bag with a brick in it. Is this really the best way to dispose of evidence? I don't know, but I'm just asking.
I feel like a judge could find a better way.
I would think you would take the evidence, and like, to me, a judgy thing would be like, let's go down to the courthouse, go down to the evidence locker, and like mix it in with some other case, right? Like, I don't know. Do stuff that you would do as a judge.
We're gonna write our show / movie.
Absolutely.
Let's do it.
But yeah, and then
we have time between your 9,000 things that you have to do now.
Don't forget to join us on Stereo tomorrow, Wednesday.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yep.
One last scene. Of course, he's doing the thing, and the guy, the police officer, sees him, and he pretends he's peeing, and he says, sorry, prostate cancer. Ba-dumps.
Except that they have to fuck that up, right? So, yes, I agree with you, Chekhov's colon. But but then the cop has got to be like, well, what's your PSA? And Bryan Cranston has to, like, good act pretending to bad act his way out of it. But here's the thing. I had to look this up, right? Because the judge is like, it's high. And the cop is like, over 100? And he's like, it's 200. And so the PSA is the screening test for prostate cancer, right? It's not a kind of thing you would ask somebody who actually has prostate cancer. Mm. What it is.
I just assumed,
anything over 4, it's measured in like milliliters. So anything over 4 is a bad sign. So like, I don't know, 200 seems like a lot to me, but whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just dumb. And then the very last scene that goes back and forth, we've got them watching. You get the kid watching all of Shawshank, the judge watching half of Shawshank, and then we see our drug kingpins at the crime scene with their hired PI who finds the asthma inhaler, which, well, better hope it's one of those over-the-counter asthma inhalers and not, you know, the one that says Bryan Cranston's son, live at 123 Street. Yeah.
Also, by the way, okay, minor thing. I know he's the PI. He's like the drug cartel PI that's going to – but okay, would a PI still care about fingerprints? Could they still utilize fingerprints? Because he puts his paws all over that fucking thing. He's like, oh, an asthma inhaler. Let me just – just grabs it everywhere he possibly could. I don't know. Would they, you know?
Well, and also, you might think the police would have found that, but, you know, maybe they're making a statement about how nobody investigates crime over in
the Shiftsville district. That's something that would have been better use of time. If you instead of a lot of the stupid crap they did, do the thing where the police are trying to get someone to say what happened there, and everyone there is like, nah, fuck you, man. We're not talking to you. And
instead of playing it like racist that way, you could have done that. And then you could have had like the drug kingpin instead of, you know, you want to make that scene not suck, have the drug kingpin down at the police station, like berating the cops for half-assing the investigation, right?
Yeah, and the cops are like, hey, man, you know how sometimes witnesses won't talk to us? Yeah. Do you know anything about that drug kingpin? Well, we had a little trouble with that, Mr. Drug Kingpin. So witnesses wouldn't talk to us. Do you have any experience with that? Like, you know, they were being silent and they wouldn't, you know, do you know anything about that? They weren't squealing, as it were.
But like, think of, I mean, to me, that would have been good television.
Yeah,
right?
No, I agree. Yeah. It would have been great. It would have been funny. It would have been like, Vince Gilligan would have done a good thing with like, so, you know, there would have been some good, like it would have been dramatic, but also you would have had bits of like dark comedy of like the drug kingpin is demanding why the police can't get witnesses to talk. You know, like that would have been funny.
All right. Okay. Well, we've got a project to write.
Yep.
But
let's get going. I'm going to sharpen my quill.
We're done with this lot of awful movies, my friend.
Oh, that was fun. We spent more time on it than Bryan Cranston was jogging, but only by a little bit.
But only by a few minutes. So what's the verdict? Are you going to watch episode two?
Nah. I if it were free, I think I'd have to buy Showtime, and I don't have it currently. But I'll tell you what, if you're looking for a show to watch on Showtime, I know this show has been a little controversial, because of, you know, like the way we cover terrorism has changed a lot, but also the show has changed a lot too, which is Homeland. Mm-hmm. I love that show. And here's the thing about Homeland. The last season was one of the best seasons I've ever seen in my life of anything. Like it was so good. And I feel like no one said anything about it. And I wonder if the show, like, honestly, the show got a little, I think it got a little questionable at times because it was started as like a terrorism-y show back in like, you know, 2009 or 10, where we still talked about terrorism in the Middle East a little bit differently, you know, then it had to evolve. And I think it did. But like the last season is really fucking good. Oh. It's just anyway. So I like that show. It's on Showtime. And, you know, if you want to watch a Showtime show.
Well, there you have it. Yeah. I will say this could, I mean, like that courtroom scene may be worse than anything Pauly Shore has ever done.
It's on that level.
It's again, made where, like, look, intentional, right? We've already done like the apex of the pyramid is intentional comedy that works, right?
Yeah.
My Cousin Vinny, right? Like it's hilarious and it's accurate. That's the apex. Intentional comedy that doesn't work. That's Pauly Shore. but now we have not supposed to be funny, howlingly hilarious for how bad it is.
Yeah.
And that is this show. That's
the bottom. Because if it's not supposed to be funny, you don't want it to be funny.
Yeah.
But not supposed to be funny and is funny is the bottom, and we've found it.
So there you go. Now it is going to be a challenge for us to outdo that scene in Your Honor.
When he just walks down. It's the best. All right. We've been a lot of awful movies. I hope you enjoyed it. There were no Rudys involved. We're back to stuff that's not Rudy, and I'm glad for it. And we didn't have to do the MyPillow guy because fuck that. I don't want to do it.
And they did it on GAM.
So fuck it. Yeah. Good times.
If you want to know how much Mike Lindell sucks, listen to God Awful Movies.
Yeah.
Which I started that this morning, but I had to rewatch this show, so I didn't get a chance to listen to much of it. So.
All right, patrons, we love you so much. We'll see you next time.
Bye.